You may not be able to stop when you want to.
Okay. Last time when we talked, we kind of laid some groundwork of some stuff from way back when, but it's the foundation for what we want to get into more. And it was interesting, very interesting. It was relaxing. It wasn't bad stuff. But I just have a sense that from here out, things are going to get kind of intense.
Probably right.
And I have to tell you that I'm having some difficulty with these interviews because although I have experienced minor injustices in my life, I'm realizing that you saw and experienced major injustices. And I don't know quite how to process that in my relationship to you. And I don't know how you've lived through it without becoming intensely bitter. And it seems like I know there's some bitterness there, but I think it would have killed me, and it hasn't killed you.
I don't know about that.
Maybe it has.
I may dispute that.
Huh?
Because it's been traumatic beyond anything I could have ever imagined.
Yeah.
And still is.
So anyway, I just wanted to get that out in the air.
Mm-hmm. Well, it hasn't been easy at all.
Yeah. None. And if these interviews become too tough...
They won't. I won't allow it.
All right.
It's too important.
Yeah.
To too many other people.
I feel that way too. So we'll plow forward. But I just wanted to express that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'll bear with it because all the things that I've done related to Betts, it's because it had to be done. It has to be.
Yeah.
And this other part is not only just the Betts. This is because I have a child involved.
Hmm. Yeah.
And then I have a little extra thing, kidnapping.
Yeah.
Which is a traumatic event in itself.
So these are things we'll get into. And I'm here with Johnny Ward in his apartment, and we'll plow into it. I want to give an introduction to what we're about to hit. Mm-hmm. And in the last interview I did with John L. Ward, Johnny, he told us that he joined the Marines to see the world and had never even heard of Vietnam. After basic training at San Diego Camp Pendleton, he was sent to Camp Lejeune on the East Coast for training in, was it supply management? Exposure to the drinking water there, he sees as the beginning of multiple health problems he is still dealing with. You probably heard about a month ago that the Veterans Administration had received a new directive stating that anyone at Camp Lejeune during that time period with present health problems is to be automatically considered that those problems were linked to the bad water. Before the individual had to prove that there was a link. How is that relating to what you're experiencing now in your dealings with the Veterans Administration?
It's the answer that I never received in the past when I was claiming for disabilities regarding injuries, illnesses, thyroid problems, and tumors, and all kinds of things that they're talking about. I was experiencing these things in up to and including surgeries. Just experienced their most recent one.
Yeah.
Where they took these blood clots out of me. Numerous blood clots from my legs and my lungs. Never had a clue. Mm-hmm. Till last year. And bam, it just went on. Then, but there were so many other injuries that related, like irritable bowel syndrome, colon spasms, multiple colonoscopies when when the camera would look like a Jeep. I don't say that in kidding. I didn't believe you can put that in me. But that happened on numerous occasions with these colon spasms, and then they've been down my throat. I've had trouble with my swallowing foods and a variety of things, esophageal problems, and so many skin rashes, dermatology problems, no answers.
I know any time I go to a different town and drink the water, I think, ugh, this tastes terrible. Because it's not the water I'm used to. Did you ever sense anything off in the water there when you were drinking it? We know there
you
was
mean
toxins
at
there. Yeah, Cap'n Lejeune.
Well, it's always different. Same
yeah.
as whenever you go somewhere, it's always
right.
different. But no, I never...
You thought about it then?
Never came,
yeah.
No, it didn't. Just didn't
mm-hmm.
have that effect.
Right. What kind of toxins do you think might have been present in that water?
All the ones they're talking about in the news today.
I see.
But I understand that because now they're saying it. This is what
right.
was there.
Yeah.
And it done what it done, but there was no clues to me over the years that I may have been affected there. I blamed it all on Agent Orange.
Now, you just got a packet from a lawyer?
My lawyers.
Veterans?
No, those are my lawyers.
Okay. And what did those packets do or reveal or where's
they
it
opened,
leading? Or
they opened up the knowledge. Now I know what's been affecting me. And it just seems like they had it right then, but they didn't know it, that they wouldn't say it.
Right.
The VA never said it. All the hospitals I went to, which were government hospitals, they never said it. All they ever knew was, we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know the causation. We don't know. We can't diagnose it. And that's how this went. With the exception that they said, what we can do is drug you into oblivion. And that's all we can do.
I'm trying to remember, but it seems like when this hit the national news, they said this was going to be affecting thousands of people who were in Camp Lejeune. Is that at all correct?
More than a thousand. Oh. More than thousands. We're talking millions.
Yeah, this is huge. And didn't they also, with this directive, say that the same thing would be used in cases throughout the recent history of veterans over in Iraq and just everywhere, that military and probably civilians were exposed to bad stuff at those locations? No longer is the burden of the proof on the individual.
No, because, yeah, you're right. What's happening is they're already doing this. In Iraq, they're talking about the smoke from the burning oil
dumps,
fires
yeah.
and all those other things that they do. And from the burning of the toilets. These are field toilets, and they have like half barrels, metal barrels inside them that they take out and set a fire with diesel fuel to clean them. That's what they do. They dump them, set them fire with cleaning with the diesel fuel. And they've been doing this in the field for a long time. Even in Vietnam, we done it and everybody does it. Other than when you have to dig a hole in the ground and do what you do, a 10 by 10 hole and then fill it, backfill it, and you're on down the way. And those are called cat holes, which is a way to do it in the field. But they, normally they'll take these half barrels out and set them afire with diesel fuel.
Yeah, this is an amazing directive that's come down, and it's, like you said, affecting millions.
Yes, and those are also... with the ammo used now, depleted uranium. that's affecting people too. Depleted uranium doesn't mean it's non-radioactive. It's just to be depleted, limited, because you can never stop the radioactivity. It's never going to stop. 1,000 years or more, just not going to stop. So that's why depleted uranium is a problem. And the vets have to handle this stuff with the artillery shells and the cannons in the tanks and all the other stuff that they use.
Well, backing up or maybe moving forward, I'm not sure which, where did you go after Camp Lejeune?
To Barstow, California, Marine Corps Supply Center, Barstow, California. It's in the desert. Mojave Desert. Pretty dry place.
What kind of work were you doing there?
I was in supply administration.
Okay.
But I transferred very quickly into Marine Corps Band.
Marine Corps what?
Band.
Van.
Band. B-A-N-D.
Okay. Band. Gotcha.
Band. I was quite a musician.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha. Right. Yeah, that's where you were playing the trumpet. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you travel much with that band, or was it all?
Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of individual travel because I was a specialist. I played taps for many vets that were coming back from Vietnam that had been killed.
Right.
And I would travel from place to place to play taps.
Right.
And do the colors and so on, representing the Marine Corps in that area.
How long was the time frame there at Barstow?
Something like 18 months.
Okay. Yeah. Did you mind the desert air?
It was hot and dry. And yeah. The snakes and the lizards and the scorpions. I didn't too much like them, but.
Where would you go on weekends around leave time?
I was 150 miles from Las Vegas. We went there a few times.
Okay.
I got over that quite quickly when they took all my money. Me hungry. And in Los Angeles, 130 miles away.
Those were the happy fun times.
Yes.
When did you get to start seeing the world and go to Vietnam?
Well, after Barstow, I was gone straight to Vietnam. Straight to Okinawa, then to Vietnam. No more band.
No more band.
No more trumpet. They gave me a machine gun, M60, and a pistol and a bunch of other weapons.
Did it hit you while you were at Barstow that that's where you were headed and what an ugly scene it was going to be?
No. No, it was kind of a rude awakening. I knew I was going because they gave me enough time. And we still had to train and do things in the desert. Even in the band, we had to do some of that. And prior to going there, you know, they orientation for the jungle and for Vietnam was the prerequisite before you got on the plane to Okinawa. And everything after that is pure orientation to Vietnam. And on the flight in, it's rather worrying. Curiosity is awesome. The plane's blacked out and coming in at night into Da Nang, which is where I went. It's pretty awesome. And you could see things happening in the distance from the airplane. Once you were down below the cloud level and all that, yeah.
And you knew it wasn't lightning
from
a storm in Iowa.
No. It was distinctive in that they were fighting. And you could see this from high in the sky, coming in at night. And we came in at night, and it's pretty awesome.
How long before you started going out on patrols and seeing some action?
Well, we immediately were assigned to battalion afloat. And what they do is they select a variety of battalions and send them aboard ship. And what they do is hit the hot spots. Wherever they need help, reinforcements, all that kind of stuff, they fly me in from on the helicopters from the battalion afloat. Because they were all on boats and all that. Sometimes they boat you in, sometimes they fly you in. Most of the time they fly you in because they need help now. And sometimes they boat you up the rivers, and like the Perfume River, we've been up that. When we came in, finally came in from battalion afloat, we came up the Perfume River at Way City and dispersed from there. And from then on, I was in combat on land all the time. Seemed like all the time, anyway.
Was the preparation they gave you ahead of time at Barstow and Okinawa at all adequate?
All of it was, yes. Yes, I have to say yes, as best as that they could provide. Unseen. And anything you could get there, it would come in handy later. Something would always come in handy later. All the little tricks that you thought were really unnecessary when you're there training, but you have to really have to do this, yes.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah, it comes back. And anybody who was negligent and putting forth their effort in the training, you pay later. You pay later. Because it's even more severe.
Was a lot of this going to hot spots just right in the jungle, or were you involved in villages too? And
most of what we were doing were in the jungle.
Yeah.
And no villages. It was all in the jungle. The village stuff started at another time, another place, for other people. I was in the jungle. Everywhere I went, there was more jungle, more getting out and away.
Were you getting exposed to, well, first let me ask this, what is Agent Orange?
Agent Orange are chemicals designed to kill crops. They say foliage. But that's just a catchword, because they had stuff that would kill papaya, coconut.
Rice patties?
Rice, wheat, barley, oats, all of that. And that's what different grasses, just, they were designed to kill the crops.
And why did they want to do that?
They wanted to do that because to deny the Viet Cong and the armies that were coming, North Vietnamese armies that were coming to South Vietnam, foods.
I always had it in my head that it was foliage, and it was to defoliate the jungle so you could shoot better at the enemy.
Well, that's what they said, but no.
It was a lot broader than that.
A lot broader. I'm telling you, Agent White was the thing that killed rice, wheat, barley, oats. Right, all these growing crops. And every crop, there's no jungle or foliage around the crops because they've been tilled. It's a rice paddy. There's no foliage around there. It's the only thing around there is rice. The only thing around there is wheat, barley, oats, rye, and all that. And the other things are bananas, papaya, coconut, and all the other fruits. Mango and all the other fruits that grow, they were designed to kill specifically those things by Monsanto and Dow Chemical.
When were you first getting exposed to areas where that stuff had been used?
To say that, it might be a little inaccurate because I didn't know, but in Quezon, which is right near the DMZ, North Vietnamese border, and Laos, I saw it all the time. When I came to that valley, Quezon Valley, it was beautiful, tropical, green, flowery. It was just wonderful. When I left, it was totally brown.
Wow.
Nothing green at all. For miles and miles and miles around Quezon. Nothing. And that's what I remember distinctly, yeah. That nothing but sticks. Bare trees, just sticks.
Dow and Monsanto made a little bit of money off that war, didn't they?
They sprayed a whole lot of poison. Wow. And I mean, they sprayed combat strength stuff. In a week, it's gone. Everything green is gone. Done. Yeah. And what they didn't poison, they blew up. B-52s, carpet bombing, boom, 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 100 yards, 100 meters outside the base.
Is it too soon to jump ahead to talking about the Tet Offensive, or are there other things that should be covered first?
Well, the Tet Offensive happened immediately after I got the caisson.
I see.
I mean, it was already underway. Hmm. Just they hadn't started shooting so tough, not at caisson yet. And caisson was one of the pivotal plays in the Tet Offensive.
Back up a second and explain why it was called the Tet Offensive and what
Tet
it is.
It happened on the Tet is a New Year.
Okay.
It's a New Year holiday. And the bombing or the artillery, rocketing, mortaring, and all that began at caisson. On the 26th of January, if I'm not mistaken, may have been the 21st, but it was somewhere in that proximity, and they blew up the ammo dump at caisson. The first time they started shooting at Old Dark 30 that morning, we had to wear gas masks, manned lines. At that time, I was manning an M60 machine gun on the line in case we were getting overrun. And all that. And we had to wear masks because they hit the ammo dump. Gas was blowing up. Ammo was blowing just everywhere. It was...
Now, I'm sure I've got this right. The offensive part of it was North Vietnam being on the offensive.
That's right.
It wasn't us being offensive on something.
No, it was strictly the North Vietnamese army.
Yeah.
And they were... gone completely berserk that morning. From then on, for the next 120 days, we were surrounded, and we saw 1,000 rounds a day, every day.
How big was caisson? People,
5,000 of us, and 40,000.
Wow.
NVA.
So it was a major.
They had us surrounded.
Yeah.
They had all the hills covered. 881, 861.
Itself, was it a small village or was it
no.
a city?
Caisson itself was the base.
Okay.
There was a caisson village. There was also another village not far from there. And they had already overrun that pretty much early in the when the combat started. And they encircled all the hills. We had all the hills at first. Hill 881, 861, and all these were the hills around caisson. Well, they took them. They attack them, overrun them.
And again, give me the number. Did you say there were 5,000 Marines?
Us.
Right. And how many?
40,000
of
the North Vietnamese.
Okay.
Regular army.
Wow. Yeah.
With their artillery and all that. They drug them up the mountains. Dug them in the caves and all that.
And when you say 5,000 of us, did that include South Vietnamese military personnel also?
Yeah, there were some of them.
Okay, some.
Yeah, some.
But
most of those were Marines.
I see. Yeah.
They called, matter of fact, one of the outfits they called the Dying Nine because they got wiped out pretty regularly.
Wow.
The whole battalion. We were the ones at caisson, and we were the ones that had to endure the incoming rockets and mortars and artillery all day, every day, and night. We lived underground with the rats. The rats wouldn't even come out.
Did, you probably can't get inside their brains, but the military deciders, why, when they saw the numbers, did they not just pull you all out? Did they really think you had a chance up there, or couldn't they get there to get you out?
Well, They didn't, but what they done was they reinforced everything that was happening that I was sent in as a reinforcement before the shooting started. But they reinforced everything, and they brought in the heavy-duty stuff, the B-52 bombers. And B-52 bombers
are big.
They're awesome. I mean, the ground shakes when they're bombing a mile away. The ground is shaking.
Were the
amazing
North Vietnamese soldiers kind of dug into where those bombers were not totally effective or not?
No, they weren't dug in that tight. They lost a lot of people out there. They wasn't dug in that tight. They had their big guns were in the caves and all that kind of stuff, but they still weren't dug in that tight.
I see.
And they ultimately, they lost a lot of people. Because when the B-52s come through, everything out there is in big, big trouble. We have to duck down, stay undercover.
I see.
And they're a mile away dropping bombs.
Did they, could you understand at all North Vietnam's objective as to why they wanted Khe Sanh so bad?
Yes. They wanted to set an example with Khe Sanh.
I see.
And attract attention away from what they were doing, what they were planning in the South. So, and they were going to do the same thing in North Vietnam, at Khe Sanh, that they done at Dinh Bien Phu, which is when the French were there, they were near Khe Sanh at Dinh Bien Phu, they had the base, that was in North, southern North Vietnam, and they routed the French, they surrounded them, put them in the siege, and artillery and rocketed and mortared them to all the way to defeated.
Wow.
And that was suggested objective for Khe Sanh. But it didn't go there. B-52s and the air power, the enormous air power. It was awesome.
Were the B-52s coming in from Thailand?
Well, yeah, I'm sure they were. Some were coming in from Thailand. I can begin to tell you all the places they were flying in from, but yeah, they were coming in from Thailand for sure. Yeah. A lot of the air support that we had, just bringing in supplies, ammo, and all that kind of stuff was coming in from Thailand.
Was all that being airdropped?
Well, not at first. At first they were landing.
Okay.
But the LZ got too, the landing zone got too hot. They had it pinpointed with artillery. They couldn't, after a couple of planes got hit, they stopped landing. And then they were coming in and dropping it, touch and go. They'd push it out the back and let an parachute would pull it out and it would just slide along one way and they'd gone. They never stopped. And then they had to quit that because the artillery were
still getting
zero.
The planes.
They were zeroed in. So they had to quit that, then they just come over as low as they could, pretty much, and drop them in parachutes. And then after it stopped blowing away stuff, you could see the parachutes not landing where they wanted to. They go outside of the perimeter. You know, nobody's going out there to get it. It's a done deal. We couldn't even go down to the creek outside the perimeter. It's a done deal. Nobody's going out there. Next day, you see all the papers and the garbage, empty boxes and trash where they had ransacked all the ammo, the food, and whatever they were, that was in that airdrop.
Am I hearing you right? The North Vietnamese military was getting in and getting all that stuff?
Yeah.
And you all couldn't even get at it? Wow.
No.
Wow.
Well, we watch it drop. That's it. Nobody's going
outside.
I'm
sorry I have to make you repeat, but some of these things I just think, what did he just say?
Yeah, but that's what happened. We were sitting there watching them take off.
Wow.
We didn't really watch them take it. At night, they had to pillage it, and you see all the trash and stuff laid out the next morning, blowing all around on the mountainside.
So as supply manager man, you weren't getting many supplies.
Not many. No, we weren't. We were not even eating really good. The sea ration and all this stuff that they had to bring to us. We was on ration. Sea rations, water, just water. Couldn't go to the creek. Done. They had to fly the water in water buffalo. These are big trailers with reels on them, but they're for hauling water, big tanks. And then they have to land them by helicopter and take off and all that. It was pretty rough.
I think you said this went on for like 120 some days.
Well, I remember 120 days of
okay.
it. And I was there, and they have on paper, I think something like 70 some days. I'm disagreeing with them with that.
Yeah.
And I was there. I left. I was with the last people that left out of the caveside.
Were there casualties heavy from the very beginning?
Yes. When the artillery was coming 1,000 miles a day.
How were you getting people out that were injured or weren't you?
When you could. Only when you could. And that's...
By helicopter?
Mm-hmm. No, whatever means necessary. But the helicopter, yeah, because nothing else could land. There was a period when nothing was landing on the strip.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. It was pinpointed. They wouldn't land anything over there. They tried to bring a few things in like that. Helicopters would come in and touch down real quick and gone.
Were they knocking down any of the helicopters?
They was knocking down. I saw them shoot fighter planes out of the sky.
Wow.
I'm watching them in binoculars mm-hmm. shoot fighters mm-hmm. out of the sky. And the pilot bailing out.
So tell me, Johnny, how were you sleeping during those days?
That's out of the question. None out of the question. Wow. Coming out of your hole in the ground, we lived in bunkers around the ground. All the time. Not part-time. All the time. There was one incident where there was a guy that was in Korea more, he was a staff sergeant. He was in the bunker that I was in. He was the most senior guy in the bunker. And it was so bad, the artillery and the mortars and all that, that he just was trembling. He said, I'm not going out there. I'm gonna relieve myself in this sea ration box. And we just have to take it out, you know, at some other time. No, not in the bunker. He was a senior guy in the bunker, mind you, but we all have weapons in here. No one is going to do their business in here at all. One goes, everybody go. You must get out of here. You're going to go outside and dig a hole. And they're not going to go to the normal place, well, the normal toilet. It's not called a toilet. But you're not going there because there was an artillery round, had bored in under it. You can see the hole right by it, bored under the toilet. And nobody was going to that toilet again, ever. No, oh no. Because it could go off at any time. No, wasn't going to happen. And this guy, he wasn't going to leave the bunker because going outside you got to go. When you got to go, you got to go, but you got to go. That's just how it is. Nobody in that bunker was going to tell him, no, you have to go. May sound bad, but you got to go out here. Anybody, whoever it was, there was a toilet is normally, we use the S word.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to leave that.
Right.
But anyway, there was a toilet close to that where there was an officer went in to use it. And a shell went off, hit the toilet. He lost his goodies in that toilet. If you understand what I'm saying. That really happened right there outside. And I mean, there were many bunkers that got direct hits. That group of troops that got killed and blown up. Just chewed up. Artillery is a monster. And they had these 152s, huge. A direct hit. You you're going to get hit anyway. The bunker can't stand it, not a direct hit. You got to go somewhere, though. You got to get in it. Any hole, little hole, big hole, you have to jump in that hole. I mean now. I got hurt more times jumping in the holes.
When did you all dig all these holes?
Before all the time.
So it was ongoing.
When I got there, everybody lived in bunkers.
Mm-hmm.
But and the holes were there. All the machinery, trucks, jeeps, Mighty Mites, that's what they call them, jeep in the Marine Corps, little bitty jeeps. They all dug in holes. They like a dozer go down and dig a hole out, and you drive down in the hole. It's underground. You come back up and do what you gotta do. The tanks will drive down the ground. When you come back up, they can shoot, boom, boom, boom. Drive back down in the ground. But you're gonna be in the ground. The road graders, down in the ground. Everything is underground.
Now, it rains all the time over there, or at least the rainy season.
Well, how'd you deal
with all the mud? Yeah, in the monsoons.
You
just a lot of mud.
Yeah, that's what you got.
Yeah.
And you're in it.
Yeah.
There's no pavement, nothing like it. Now, sidewalks, no. No, it's strictly
mud. No gravel truck coming in.
No, it's strictly mud.
Yeah.
Nothing but mud.
Hmm.
That's all you get, mud, and if it's not mud, it's sun. And even in the jungle, after a while, our caisson had nothing green after a while. So it was just all mud when it rained.
It doesn't sound like you all were able to do much of anything defensively. That was all being done from air power, wasn't it?
No, there were tanks.
Okay.
Antos, which were 106 recoilless rifles, they mount like six of them on a little platform that they drive. It's almost looked like a go-kart.
I see.
But they got six recoilless rifles on it, 106s, and they back up out of the hole, boom, 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 shoot, down, back down in the hole, reload, back up, yeah. So we were, then the mortars were firing, everybody was shooting back.
Was that at all effective?
Well, from my point of view, everything was effective.
Okay.
Everything we done, they kept them off of us.
I see.
I gotta consider effective.
I see. Yeah.
I have to. Here I am. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you about it. It was effective mm-hmm. for me. A lot of people got killed in the process, but mm-hmm. It was effective.
Now, I'm going to jump ahead with this question, but what was the end of that Tet Offensive? How did it turn out?
Well, it didn't turn out so well. Ultimately, I would say the U.S. lost that, because after Quezon was just opening salvo, because Way City, all the major cities, Way City, Phu Bai, every city, all the way to Saigon erupted.
I see.
The ultimately the Vietnamese were digging underground. They're trying to dig underground and pop up in Quezon too. But they were digging, they had caves and all this all underground throughout all those cities, going all the way to Saigon, even Saigon.
Hmm. Yeah.
And they were popping out of the ground and doing their dirt. They're popping out of the ground and really, And they were successful at it.
It sounds like it would take millions of personnel to do all that.
It could.
But they didn't have millions, did they?
You mean the Vietnamese?
The North Vietnamese, yeah.
Well, it seemed like millions.
Yeah, I expect so.
Well, it seemed like it. I mean, I got hit in another place. And it was close to Phu Bai.
So you were not hit at Quezon?
Well, no, just something. I got sprinkled in the eye with something, and but I made it through that.
Yeah.
And I wasn't hit. A lot of people were. But when we left Quezon, I got hit at another place called Phu Lop.
let me stop you a second. Do you have any idea what the American casualties were in Quezon?
A lot. I'm just
say a lot.
Oh man, there's so many. Because we just sit there for all those days receiving artillery.
Right. And death.
Somebody getting blown up.
Right, death and casualties. Just
mortars, rockets, artillery shell. I mean, oh yeah, it was different bunkers getting hit as they go. And then those that were traveling outside the bunkers, I used to have to go outside the bunkers to do different things. I even had a little mighty man I'd be driving. And have to bail out of that because the shooting starts. And you just have to get out, and that little mighty man got to go where he's going. And we're out.
Now, I interrupted. Let's talk about where you were injured and how that happened.
That was at Fulak. And it was close to the top of the mountains at the top of Elephant Pass near Da Nang. You go up the highway, the mountains through Elephant Pass and all of that. And Fulak was right there by the ocean and the top of Elephant Pass.
Sounds like a beautiful place.
It was. It was, absolutely. But it wasn't long before it got ugly at Fulak. And we were supposed to have been cooling out, being in relief after Quezon. But no. It wasn't the right spot because they have singled us out to get ambushed and attacked. And we did. And one of the spots there I felt funny about because one of the approaches to where I had to sleep, it looked, you couldn't see around it enough to get any previews. If I'm coming in, I'm coming in that way. Or they coming in, they're coming in that way because they're right on top of it. It was right on top of my bunker at that point. And it looked like something was going to happen because there was a little place across the street probably where they were spying. They were selling sodas and beers and things, the Vietnamese were. And that just disappeared. And it wasn't long, we got hit. We got overrun. And I mean overrun. And I got wounded that night. Pretty badly, to say the least.
Was it rifle fire or
rifle fire, shrapnel, mortar, all of it.
I see. It all hit you.
It all hit me.
Yeah.
Well, I got blown up first. And I mean blown up into the air, blown up. Busted eardrums.
Wow.
Damage to the lens of my eyes. Brain damage. Multiple shrapnel wounds, all kinds of...
What were you doing when you got hit?
I was on the ground. No, I was moving, trying to get to... But I was inside the bunker when I first got hit. And it blown up.
Had and you I been remember, on the surface, it would have been all over for you.
Well, I was on the... Yeah, probably. Rock. I don't know how I lived through that one. I mean, I was blown up in the air. I didn't know I was in the air until I hit the ground.
There you go. Yeah.
And when I hit the ground, I felt like I was pinned to the ceiling, but I wasn't. And I hit the ground, and then I had the traumatic shock. I was shaking and trembling. But then I got shot a few times, bullets back going under me, and all around me. And
were there other people hit at the same time?
I'm sure. I'm sure.
Yeah.
I can't tell you a whole lot about it because once I got hit, I was... I was in la-la land, but I stopped shaking and trembling, and then I started trying to crawl and get behind these sandbags. And I could feel, bullets going under my body.
Under your body?
Oh, under my, feeling hit the ground, all that. I was in space somewhere, but I could tell that I was getting hurt pretty badly. And but I got behind these sandbags, and I figure I'm waiting on somebody to come and poke me with the bayonets or come on and shoot me or something because I'm done.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm done. And they never did come. I wasn't in any pain. I was in shock is what was happening. I didn't know it then, but I wasn't in any pain. And I'm worried about somebody coming and finding me and sticking me with the bayonet and all that. And I'm hearing all the shooting around, outside.
And somehow you were able to crawl behind these sandbags.
Yeah, I did. I made it. And they're behind the sandbags. But I'm laying on my back because I know I'm hit. I'm thinking I'm hit all over. I know I'm bleeding. I know I'm bleeding from my head. And I know I'm bleeding from my hand and all that. I didn't feel me bleeding anything, but I knew it was happening. I mean, I knew it'd been, I could feel everything, not everything, but most things that hit me. And then I heard his voice, I seen a light. Oh, I said, here they come. I thought it was them not been me, he's coming in to finish me off.
Right.
And then I heard the voices. I thought I heard English. So I spoke up and raised my head, but anyway, get left out there. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. And so it's really dark and not streetlights. But then I raised my head up, tried to peep over those sandbags, and I don't know what I said. I don't even remember what I said. I grunted, done something, and they said, where you hit? I said, all over. Can you walk? I said, I'll try. I got up, but I went. I was going. So I'm going. They caught me. I was falling out. I was going out. And they put me in a poncho. They didn't know where I was hit. They were shining flashlights. Because we had support. It was the Puff. They got a Puff, the magic dragon, flying around and squirting ammo. I mean, everybody outside, the Vietnamese were running up the mountainside and all that, trying to get away from Puff. And when I came, they took me out of there and put me up where they were mounting, bringing all the wounded people. And that's where they started patching me up and all that. And I'm still not hurting at the time. But
so mainly they're dealing with trying to stop bleeding.
Yes.
Yeah.
First things first.
Right.
And that's what they were doing. Then they found finding holes. They found a hole in my leg and all kinds of other stuff there. They're patching up, trying to save these fingers. They saved that one but not long. Mm-hmm. You can see where they put it back on, and they were still hooked on the meat. But there was a lot of holes and a lot of people getting patched, and there were a few dead people up there.
Were there any actual broken bones in your body?
Yeah, you're okay. Looking at.
All right.
But both of them were broken.
Yeah.
This was broken.
So you lost two fingers. What do you mean up here?
My skull.
It was cracked or something?
You don't see the crack.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I've had plastic surgery, all kinds of stuff.
You're pointing things, but I need to make it for the radio here. Oh.
That's no, I'm asking you, did you see?
More gory details.
Okay. Okay, well, you can see all the holes.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I tried a few holes and all that in
there. Were there anything broken in your legs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was shot twice there. So, I didn't know there used to be a hole in there like that.
Yeah.
So there was a few things cracked up, blown up.
About your internal organs, what was going on there?
They were just, I just didn't get him in action because I couldn't worry about that. I was preoccupied, trust me. And I still didn't know all the problems I had.
Right. Do you think you took any bullets to the chest?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so it was all. The head and the legs and the fingers.
And now when I got hit, all over my
shrapnel,
all over my arms,
and
just all over the place.
You said they put you in a poncho. That's how they were moving you?
Yeah.
Instead of the old...
you don't know where to grab.
Stretchers, right.
So in a poncho, you don't have to grab nothing. Just grab the edges of the poncho.
Yeah. So they took you from behind the sandbags in a poncho... To where? Underground? To work on the bleeding?
No, they took me to the where they were bringing all the wounded people.
Okay.
Up at, it was at the medical,
mm-hmm.
in front of the medical bunker.
Yeah.
But, and it was out in the open air,
Right.
Lanterns and stuff ablazing. And, all of that, and they were patching up everybody up there, is all I can tell you, because I couldn't really see. I had damage to the lens of my eyes and all kinds of stuff. My eyes were bleeding, my ears were bleeding, I had two ruptured eardrums, and I was in trouble.
Yeah.
And I couldn't really see, and and then they loaded me on this truck, and on the stretcher on this truck, and I started hurting really badly. And I know when the truck started moving, and you know, they had to tell him to slow down because there was too many people on the back of the truck that was hurting. I heard that part. But I woke up 7 days later in Yokosuka, Japan.
Did they drug you? That's why you were out for 7 days?
No, I was in a coma.
Your body shut down.
Well, I was coma.
Right. Did they do anything for immediate pain? Do you remember? Do you know?
I wasn't in pain. And I didn't until I woke up.
I see.
And when I woke up, I was hooked on morphine.
Yeah. And where'd you say you woke up 7 days later?
Yokosuka, Japan.
Japan. Okay.
In a naval hospital.
Right.
And they had. I couldn't tell you anything before that. Didn't know anything before that. I knew I woke up in pain. And they had priests and nuns all in there. I know that. They thought they were going to lose me. One of the friends, one of the guys I met that was in the hospital, he had just dropped out of a helicopter and broke an arm and all that from Texas. And he told me about how they received me when I got there and how they thought they were going to lose me and all that. And they didn't lose me. And here I am.
Yeah. I think maybe we ought to call it quits at this point. We're almost at an hour, and I think this would be a good break point. And from here, we'll go on about what all they did at Yokosuka and how long that was and what the journey back was.
Pretty awesome.
Wow.
That is a lot, too.
You know, I've seen some war movies, of course, we all have. I don't know that I've ever
now those are movies.
Experienced anything quite like what you just told me.
Well,
never.
I'm glad you haven't. I mean, it's not a good thing at all.
Yeah.
Everything I've told you is documented. I got something you could read, but I think I'm going to give it to you. It's an old raggedy book.
Yeah.
I wrote it. But it's raggedy. I just carry it out. I'm going to get it for you.
Okay, I'm going to shut down now. Thanks, Johnny. We'll get together and go from here.